who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Vic Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So the U.S. Supreme Court, another decision of, well, you got to kind of question. I see people on both sides of this separation of church and state debate with very differing opinions, very differing thoughts. On one side, you've got the Christian right going, oh boy, cash! The wall of separation has been destroyed. The line is gone. You've got folks on the other side going, hold on a second, this ruling doesn't do that. You've got others saying, well, maybe that line of separation is now just a dotted line. I'm here to talk a little bit about it. I've asked our good friend Christopher Stroop to come talk with us. He's a writer and ex-evangelical, someone I think kind of an expert on this in my view. Christopher, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me back on, Rick.
So, you know, where are you with this? The Supreme Court came down 7-2 ruling that this church school could get some rubber chips, which they had already gotten before the case went to the Supreme Court. Where are you falling on this?
Well, you know, because it was a 7-2 decision, I really felt the need to dig deep and look at all the issues of this very closely. I am ultimately really surprised at where Breyer and Kagan came down. I mean, it's really silly to compare the use of public funds in an actual church to police and fire protection, to which, of course, they're entitled. So I think they oversimplified the case. And at the end of the day, I'm really convinced by Justice Sonia Sotomayor's dissent. It's powerful. It's beautiful. It's long and detailed and thoroughly documented. I think the court got this one wrong, and it does dangerously work to undermine the separation of church and state.
So, you know, in that, the question then comes, you know, on which side do you fall? Because, you know, I see some of my religious friends who are not thrilled because if the churches start taking federal money, that comes with strings, doesn't it?
I mean, it certainly could. That's a danger here that some would argue. And it's a longstanding argument, and it's one that even many evangelicals used to take previously in the middle of the 20th century. That, you know, if you get into bed with the state, ultimately this is bad for both the church and the state. And interestingly, it's that classic argument that Justice Sotomayor pressed in her dissent. And, you know, there are certain religious organizations that are very much on board with that, including the Baptist Joint Committee for Religious Liberty. They're very consistent in their approach to religious liberty, which means that they are very much out of step with most American evangelicals these days. And, you know, they're sort of more in the tradition of, say, Jimmy Carter in that respect. And today, of course, most evangelicals, white evangelicals, conservative Catholics, Mormons, and so forth, are pushing this religious liberty line, which actually represents a radical expansion of the Free Exercise Clause. And that is very much reflected in Neil Gorsuch's concurrence, where he basically says, yeah, let's tear down this wall. Let's have government funding available to religious institutions, including houses of worship themselves, with no restrictions. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, you know, with the Baptist Joint Committee, there was a lot of acrimonious tension between them and the Southern Baptist Convention in the 1980s. And ultimately, the Southern Baptists entirely pulled all funding, all affiliation from that committee, and I believe it was 1991. So there's a bit of history behind this.
Right. But, you know, here's the thing. And you look at this and you go back to the history. I mean, one of James Madison's first vetoes was giving money to churches because one, you know, thought it would corrupt not government, but corrupt the churches. And you're right.
Sure.
I mean, you know, I see this. this moment of, you know, a split within the religious community, because there are those who preach the prosperity gospel and hooray for me and we want all the money, and it just seems to be about the money more than it is about the faith and all of the things that churches are supposed to stand for.
Sure. I mean, you definitely see that at this elite level of generally white conservative evangelicals. You know, one of the organizations that wrote an amicus brief on behalf of Trinity Lutheran was the American Center for Law and Justice. That's Jay Sekulow's organization. He, of course, has been getting a lot of press recently since he's on Donald Trump's legal team. There's a great expose in The Guardian that came out recently showing that he uses his network of non-profit organizations to funnel lots and lots of cash to members of his family.
Isn't that convenient? I mean, isn't it cozy? I mean, when you start looking on all of these ties with these different organizations, these power brokers and politicians, I mean, doesn't it all seem kind of just a bit too convenient?
Sure, absolutely. But there is also ideology in play. I mean, you know, these religious fundamentalists, they also really do want dominance. They think they have the right to dominate. So for some, I think it is cynical and about the money, some in these leadership roles. You know, people like Sekulow and Ralph Reed of the Faith and Freedom Coalition are just morally repugnant human beings and major hypocrites. But there are a lot of people for whom it also is about asserting control. And of course, money is a means of doing that. It's power, if you have a lot of it.
Let me move over to education, because there are some who are saying that this decision could potentially open the door. I know there's a case in Colorado that's making its way through the courts, that this could, or actually was sent back to the lower courts for decision, that this could open the door for charter schools and these religious institutions to get public money for education through the vouchers. Do you see that in this bill, or do you see that, you know, they did enough to quash that?
You know, one might say that in the majority opinion written by Chief Justice John Roberts, footnote 3 was meant to sort of limit this case, just these kinds of sort of public good things where, well, why should a church not have access to a state grant program that's basically for the protection of children? He seems to have indicated maybe this decision should not be seen as expansive, but that footnote 3 was rejected by Justices Clarence Thomas and Neil Gorsuch explicitly in their concurrences. They do want to see this as a much more expansive thing. I mean, we're already in a situation where many states do fund religious schools through vouchers. We have a government in power now that certainly wants to expand those programs. So I do think it's a dangerous precedent. I think the stars are aligning for us to see more state and perhaps federal money used to promote religious views in the realm of education, sure.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm looking at the Trinity case and I'm going, you know, why should public dollars be used for private means? I mean, at the end of the day, are my kids allowed to go play on that playground that now has you know, these rubber chips? And I know it's just over some, you know, some reusable, you know, chewed up tires, but it's still public dollars, in my view, going to private entities that, you know, is it there for the use of the public, or is this playground open to everybody?
Well, you know, when it comes to the use of public dollars for private entities or entities with religious affiliation, there's a lot of precedent for some such use of public funds when it's for a general public good. There has been a pretty hard line between institutions like, say, Catholic hospitals or Christian universities and actual churches, houses of worship, in the past. And that's what's the precedent that's really broken with this decision. So, you know, there can be some room for public funds to be distributed to private organizations, even that have a religious affiliation, if they're to be used for secular purposes for the common good. But I think that the distribution of public funds directly to a church is the worrisome aspect here.
Yeah. No, I mean, this, when I was reading through it, I go, this is cracking that door open to where we know down the road it's going to go. And again, I go back to, you know, when Gorsuch was being confirmed, you know, these were all part of that question packet that should have been asked. And again, another reason why the stolen Supreme Court seat is so important.
Right. And now we can see very clearly where he's going to be on religious liberty cases. And they are going to be hearing the case of that Colorado baker in the fall regarding LGBT rights, you know, public accommodation in businesses. Will this baker have the supposed right to discriminate against same-sex couples? So, you know, there are a lot of reasons to be concerned here. And, yeah, it's really clear where Gorsuch is. He is quite radically conservative, religious conservative, and then he's willing to expand the free exercise clause to basically mean churches can do whatever they want and get government money at the same time.
So is this the beginning of taking us back to the future?
You know, it could be. I'm not the world's most optimistic person, and the Christian right is very ascendant at the moment. I personally do think important rights are at risk. I think we're coming upon a situation where, you know, they get one more SCOTUS seat, given that they stole one. And Roe v. Wade is at risk. Obergefell is at risk. So
Griswold's at risk. I mean, you go back to, you know, just the idea that you have the right to contraception with married couples. I mean, that's going back and undoing all of that.
Yeah. We're definitely seeing a radical expansion of the definition of religious liberty. And the fact that this Trinity Lutheran decision was 7-2 concerns me that perhaps the Overton window has shifted even further.
And what is that? What does that mean for, you know, because a lot of people who may be hearing this interview are going, well, I don't know anything about this stuff. What does that mean for the average person who isn't an evangelical, who may not be into the, you know, to the extremes of either side? What does that mean for the average person?
Well, it means an erosion of your rights and an erosion of American secularism, religious neutrality. So radical religious conservatives reject the very idea that any institution can be religiously neutral. That makes them essentially anti-democratic, a threat to human rights and democracy. So if this continues to run rampant like it's doing now, it's going to mean probably, quite possibly, a worse education for your kids, maybe less funding for the public school, if you send them there, maybe greater religious infiltration and indoctrination, even in a public school context, possibly. It's going to mean limited rights, limited access to abortion, perhaps the expansion of the possibility for businesses, which should be required to accommodate everyone equally, to discriminate against members of the LGBT community. There are a lot of implications. Even though this particular case is about something so banal as whether a church for its learning center, which has a daycare and a preschool, has the right to apply for a state program to improve its playground.
Of which I add, they got the improvement well before this case was settled.
They did. And so Garrett Epps, who's a constitutional scholar, argued in The Atlantic that the Supreme Court shouldn't even have heard this case.
And I kind of agree, because there was no injury. They got what they wanted.
Right. It's sort of bizarre. There's, you know, church-state issues like this at the state and local level can be fuzzy. But the way that the Supreme Court decided this one, to me, is setting a dangerous precedent. I mean, it's defying a lot of previous precedent. Justice Sotomayor's dissent is very, very clearly lays that whole history out.
I mean, we could be opening Pandora's box to, you know, we're making hate great again, Christopher. And it's not just
yes,
the LGBT people. I mean, it's, you know, it's whatever. And whatever they decide, you know, I, black, white, you know, Asian, whatever. You're a different religion. I mean, this could, this,
sure.
this slippery slope.
It's a war on women. It's a war on the LGBT community. It'll also open the door, perhaps, for more racial discrimination. You know, because that's the sort of thing that used to be debated, say, with Bob Jones, for example, and its famous case of not allowing interracial dating or marriage. which ultimately lost its tax-exempt status for it, but it took a long time.
Sounds like we've got good times ahead, Christopher.
Oh, yes.
Lots of fun and games. Not in a good way, and I'd love to have you back as this continues, because this isn't going anywhere. Keep us up to date with this and everything else going off into the extreme.
Sure, Rick, anytime.
Great talking with you, Christopher Stroop. I appreciate the time. Again, if you want to check out some of his stuff, he does some great writing. We'll get a link at thericksmithshow.com. You can also follow him on Twitter at _Stroop, C_Stroop. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Well, my goodness gracious, let me tell you the news. My head's been wet with the midnight dew. I've been down on bended knee, talking to the man from Galilee. He spoke to me with a voice so sweet, I thought I heard the shuffle of angels sweet. He called my name and my heart stood still when he said, John, go do my will. Go tell that long tongue.